Hi, this is Leon Daniels, and this is Lunch with Leon, an ITTHub.net production. Please check across at our website, ITTHub.net, for all the latest news, podcasts not just from me, but from some of my colleagues as well. At Lunch with Leon, I try and find every week somebody that I find fascinating and who I think you might find fascinating as well to have lunch with me. This week, my lunch is with my friend Lucy Yu. So Lucy is Director of Public Policy for Voi Scooters. Voi is providing around the world and now increasingly in the UK electric self-drive, self-hire e-scooters. These are amazing zero-emission personal mobility units that are increasingly popular around the world. And I talked to Lucy all about it. So, Lucy, tell us about Voi Scooters.
Yeah, well, so we're a Swedish company. We were founded in 2018, so just recently passed our second birthday. We were the first e-scooter company in Europe. So we started our rental operations in Stockholm in Sweden, which is our home city. But we have expanded very quickly since then. We really built up a wealth of experience from lots of different markets. So we now have operations in about 45 different cities in 10 countries outside the UK. The UK now is our 11th market, and we will be adding quite a sizable number of cities to our existing operations. Our model is an on-street rental. So users can locate our scooters in the app and then they pay an unlock fee and then a fee per minute to rent the scooter. But we do also have different options available for longer term rentals. So we have day passes and we also have monthly passes. And within those options, it's an all-you-can-eat approach. And so people can use our scooters for longer rides and for more rides.
So I'm going to tell you that Stockholm was the first place where I ever rode an e-scooter.
Mm.
And you
was it a Voi e-scooter?
No, it wasn't actually. It was one of your competitors. And I remember it clearly because it was UITP in Stockholm. And I had a dinner engagement with a number of very worthy people, including my old boss, the commissioner at TfL, Mike Brown. Mm-hmm. Some old colleagues, Gareth Powell and Michelle Dix, Laura Schoaf from West Midlands, and others. And I've just been watching the e-scooters in Stockholm, and I was determined to have a try. But I found what I had to do was to watch other people do the process first. So I downloaded the app, and then I watched what other people did, and then I had a go at it myself, totally untaught, I have to say. And after a successful experience, I actually rented it and took myself to the restaurant where, much to the surprise of Mike, Gareth, Michelle, Laura, and others around the table sat in the window, I roared up on an e-scooter, which they thought was very funny. And I thought it was quite funny too. But for me, the biggest obstacle was that first sensation with it. So one of the things I didn't realize by watching people is that, in fact, you have to get it up to a bit of a speed manually before the electrics work.
Yes.
I stood just there on the road, twisting the throttle and wondering why I wasn't going anywhere. And then I realized that you have to pedal a bit yourself, right, on the road, like a manual scooter, like a kid.
That's right.
And then you get going.
Yeah, you're right. And this is something, so when we launch in a new market, we hold pop-up events on the day of launch and then in the days afterwards. And we do a bunch of things at those events. So one of the things we use them for is to give away free helmets. Of course, we want to encourage riders to wear a helmet when they ride. But we also have some very experienced riders there and they can familiarize people with the vehicle if it's the first time they've used an e-scooter. And we can take them through some of these details. You know, one of the things we say to people is, normally ask them which is the foot they use to play football. Now, if you don't play football, you can kind of imagine in your head which foot you might use to play football. And that's probably the foot then that you want to use to effectively to kind of kick off. So you'll probably place your other foot on the scooter and then you'll use your football foot to do a couple of kind of steps on the ground and that brings the scooter up to speed manually, and then you can engage the go button on our scooter, which acts a little bit like I suppose, the accelerator pedal on a car. And if you press that a little bit harder, you get a little bit more power. And if you let go of that, you reduce the pressure on that, then you get a little bit less power. So you can control the speed of the scooter in that way.
Well, of course, in my case, I only had two left feet in football. No wonder that didn't come naturally to me. But I thought, firstly, it was a very liberating experience. Mm. I was in total command of my own destiny. I was certainly very aware of my vulnerability. So I was very careful. And once we got the hang of it, it was a very nice experience. I think after my first ride, I'd obviously tried too hard to overcorrect it, and my muscles were hurting from using too much overcorrection. The thing didn't need that. But it wasn't too fast. I was very comfortable. The other road users of Stockholm were very, very nice about it. And it seems certainly in your home city to have taken root as a perfectly reasonable part of the whole personal mobility, public transport mix. And my guess is that once you get under the skin of people like that, then it's a normal option for them. Is that what seems to happen?
Yeah, I think you're right that obviously for people when it's a completely new vehicle and they haven't tried it before, it has the novelty of being something different, but it also has that unfamiliarity. And I think once people have tried it once or twice and they've got used to it and they've got used to the handling, then it's something that they very quickly want to use on a regular basis, and they can immediately see all the types of journeys that it will be useful for them. And we particularly find that people want to use the scooters to make trips that might seem perhaps just a little bit too far for people to walk. So it tend to be those journeys maybe between 1 to 3 miles, for instance. So for those journeys, we are a really good substitute for people who might choose to take their car in other circumstances. Obviously, we want to encourage mode shift to much cleaner forms of transportation, such as our scooters.
So you won't be surprised to know that if I then put my regulator's hat on, or my UK regulator's hat on, my immediate concerns are, of course, is that these are all below the threshold for any sort of testing, either the vehicle or the driver. It's below the threshold for compulsory crash helmet wearing. It's below the threshold for the CBT test. And it's a sort of free-for-all with a low barrier to being a user. So I guess the big question as a regulator is, are you operating in an area where there just isn't any regulation because nothing like this has ever existed before? Mm. Or are you just justifiably just one step up from a pedal cycle where nobody would ever suggest there ought to be testing or licensing of any sort? So how do you feel about the regulatory space that you are, that you're occupying?
Well, I think the short answer to your question, are we operating in an area where there is no regulation? The short answer is no. The trials, all of the trials that we're conducting in the UK are actually, they're under the DFT approval. So you will know that earlier this year, and partly as a response to the coronavirus, the Department for Transport changed some of the rules to allow operators to run trials for a period of 12 months. So all of our trials are taking place under this DFT framework. And the Department for Transport has put in place a number of rules that all operators for all trials need to follow. And many of those are really rules designed to ensure that the trials are conducted in a controlled way and with certain standards in place. So there are, for instance, standards that have to apply to the vehicles. So all of our vehicles we have three different models of scooter. All of them have a vehicle special order from the Department for Transport. We have a maximum speed of 15.5 miles per hour for all of the trials in any of the areas that we will operate in the UK. We also have the ability to cap that speed at a slower speed. So we have something called slow speed zones, and we're working with all of the cities that we're operating to between us, work out where those slow speed zones should be and make sure that they are programmed into the software. The DfT hasn't chosen to make helmet wearing mandatory, but we're thinking about some of the things we can do to incentivize users and encourage our riders to do that. So one of the things that I mentioned is just giving away lots of free helmets. When we launch in new areas, we also give our Voi Pass subscribers a free helmet to use as well. And we're also using, under the trials, it's not legal to use these vehicles on the pavement. That remains illegal. The vehicles have to use the roads and designated cycle lanes. What we want to do is to make sure that our riders are equipped and trained to ride as safely as they can. We have something called Ride Like Voiler, which is our online traffic school. In fact, it's the industry's the very first accredited e-training course for micromobility. So this is a little bit like, if you think about your driving theory test, when you answer a bunch of questions about things like the rules of the road, traffic law, we have an equivalent. We focus on some of the rules and the laws that we would want an e-scooter rider to know. And we test people on those and we incentivize people to take that training. So when they pass the course, when they complete the course, they receive rider credits. And so far, we've had about 500,000 people around the world have completed that training. We've recently localized it for the UK market. Obviously, there are some, not only are there different road rules, there are some fundamental differences, such as riding on the left or driving on the left. So we've completed that and it is approved by DriveTech from the AA. So we really strongly encourage people to take this course as well.
So the other thing that worries me with my regulator's hat on, because I sat through it, of course, was the arrival of dockless bikes in London, where a couple of overseas companies descended on us with thousands of bikes, and they were all over the pavement, they were all over public space, they were everywhere. So not like the Santander scheme, where you have to dock at a docking station, but these were all over London, and we were forever going around picking loads of them up. Eventually, they were all brought together in a hangar somewhere in London, where the owners were invited to come and pay us to take them back again. So a criticism always with this type of thing is, on the one hand, it's very flexible and is almost door to door. But the downside of that is that scooters can be left in a place which is causing an obstruction, maybe to the blind, people in wheelchairs, and so on. So what stops people from being inconsiderate with the parking of the scooters?
Well, so there are a few points to make here. I mean, one is around rider education. So we do have messaging within our app and within the Ride Like Voiler traffic school that I talked about that show people what good parking behaviour looks like, educate them about how to park the vehicles and where to park the vehicles and where not to park the vehicles. So that's a really important part of this. We also use geofencing technology extensively within our operation. So this is really using our software to designate different parts of our operating area. And so we can designate certain areas, for instance, as no parking zones, but we can also designate other areas perhaps as mandatory parking zones or incentivized parking zones. And so what we do with these is for instance, in a no parking zone, the user is unable to end their ride, and therefore the ride continues to accrue charges until the user takes the vehicle back into a permitted parking zone. And for an incentivized parking zone, that's an area where we might particularly like a user to end a ride. And in that case, we might do something like give them a rider credit if they do end their ride there. So we have different tools we can use to help support that. And then, of course, we have an operations team who use entirely electric vehicles powered by renewable energy. And they are always on the ground in our operational areas. They do a number of things. And one of the things they do is actually just make sure our fleet is fully charged. So the fleet has swappable batteries, which means we don't need to take the scooters back to our warehouse to charge. We can simply go out with some fully charged batteries and swap batteries in situ. But one of the other things they can do is they can help to correct any scooters that might be wrongly parked, but also just to help us rebalance the fleet. So if we find that scooters are congregating in certain parts of the city, perhaps, and we want to spread them out a little bit so that we have better availability for our customers, we can do that using that operations team. So the parking puzzle is a mixture of educating riders and also having efficient operations ourselves as well. On the point about vulnerable road users and road users with particular needs, we do work closely with organisations who represent different disabilities. Sight loss is one of those. So we have worked with the RNIB and Guide Dogs and a number of other organisations just to really understand what their concerns might be about services like Voice. And we have reflected that in our operations in a number of different ways. And in fact, one of the things we've done is, I talked about the traffic school we have and how we've localized it for the UK. We have also included some additional questions that just reflect the needs and the concerns of these particular road users. So we obviously consult with them on a regular basis, and we'll continue to do so in all of the cities that we're operating.
Okay, so just making sure that I understand this, the true position is here that electric scooters are illegal, but DfT is running a series of limited trials. So you still can't buy one and use it yourself, but you can hire one from one of the DfT trial areas where you're,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is what you're participating in. You still can't ride them on the pavement, so you've got to be on
the
road.
Stay off the pavement.
Yeah, okay. And so then this is personal mobility in the trial areas only. It does seem to me the police aren't bothering to enforce any of the rules. Certainly there are plenty of owned e-scooters being used both on the pavement and on the road, and police don't seem too bothered. In fact, they're probably too busy. But I guess the reason you're participating in this and the reason why the government is trialing this is it's minded to make them legal if these trials demonstrate that they're safe and workable. Is that where we're headed?
Well, ultimately our experience from other cities around Europe shows that this is a mode of transportation that people are willing to adopt and people do adopt quite readily, and that really complements existing public transport. So this can be a very green and convenient way of getting around, and also a very affordable way of getting around. So we would love to see this become part of the future transport mix in the UK. And in order for that to happen, these trials are really important because they will give us the evidence about how people do use them and in the longer term, what are the rules that should apply in the UK. So you're right to say that personal privately owned scooters remain illegal. And they're obviously not subject to the same constraints that the fleets that are part of the DfT trials are. So for instance, they may not have the same maximum speed that the DfT trial fleets do. So I think it's important to say that these trials that are permitted by the DfT are really critical, are really crucial, because they will really help us understand what those rules should look like.
The other question I wanted to ask is, presumably where there are, like we have in London, dedicated cycle lanes, cycle superhighway and so on, you're in there, right? You're in with the cyclists in the dedicated cycle infrastructure?
For most of the trials we're doing, we're using cycle lanes wherever they're available. When they're not available, we are using the space on a normal road that a cyclist would occupy. So we're over on the left-hand side. But actually, a lot of the cities we'll be going to already have quite extensive cycle infrastructure. So one of the cities we'll be starting operating in fairly soon is Cambridge, which is obviously famous as a cycling-friendly city. In most cases, we obviously are taking advantage of cycle lane infrastructure where it already exists.
And where else are you operating apart from Cambridge and hoping to be in London when the London scheme eventually is...
So Cambridge and Peterborough is one of the regions. Northampton and Kettering is another region. So we began our operations in Northampton just very recently. And we've also been awarded the world's largest exclusive e-scooter contract in the West Midlands. So this is seven different regions, including Birmingham and Coventry. So we're extremely excited about that and looking forward to working with the region.
And when I saw you last weekend and you'd been for your e-scooter familiarisation trip, from the scooters we saw, they're a better design than the ones I have seen elsewhere. Mm,
yeah.
They looked more rugged and they looked just altogether more substantial. Yeah. So are there some special features that only Voi scooters have that make them more attractive to users?
Yeah, so our scooters are a custom design, so they're not one that you can buy off the shelf from a scooter manufacturer. They're made specifically for Voi and specifically to our specification. We have a number of features that are really all designed around safety and around having a more comfortable ride. And also, as you said, for a more rugged and resilient fleet. So some of the important things we have a double suspension at the front of the scooter. This is obviously particularly good, hydraulic suspension, I should say. This is particularly good at absorbing shock. So, if a scooter rider is on a slightly uneven road surface, it's very good at absorbing that shock and just making sure the ride remains steady. And that's obviously safer for the rider and safer for other road users around the rider. The scooters are fitted with a tamper-proof bell. So we do know from talking to some of the other bike share schemes that have come to the UK in the past that the bell has been one of the things that people have targeted for vandalism and tried to remove from the bikes. So ours is very, very well integrated into the scooter, very difficult to remove. In fact, probably pretty much impossible to remove. We have lights on the front and back of the scooter. We have various different features, and the whole scooter itself is very ruggedized and has been designed to really be part of a shared scheme such as Voi's. So we have had some independent assessments done on its life cycle, and those have confirmed that it's a minimum of 4 years on average for each of our scooters. And when they do reach the end of their life, and we take part in various programs to recycle the different components. Very much focused on having as sustainable an operation as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't properly thought about the whole recycling part of this. So you as a company then have got a particular sort of recycling mechanism whereby as much as possible of the scooter, including the battery,
yep,
is ethically and environmentally properly disposed of.
Yeah, that's right. And this is something that's important to us generally. So in January this year, we went carbon neutral in all of the cities we operate. That continues to be a commitment in the UK. So every market we operate here, our operations will be carbon neutral. So this is an area we always want to improve. We will always be looking at ways that we can improve our environmental footprint and be the most sustainable operator in the industry.
Okay, Lucy, but isn't one of the problems that just about anybody who can stand up and has got a mobile phone can hire one of these scooters, even if they're 12, 15, 90. Isn't that a real risk that people who otherwise just wouldn't be allowed on the roads will be all over us?
Well, so first thing to say is for the purpose of the trials, there is a minimum age of 16, but also another important point is that you must have a driving license to be able to use one of these scooters in the UK. Now, it doesn't have to be a full driving license. A provisional license is acceptable, but you do need to have that. So that we shouldn't have any 12-year-olds on any scooters anywhere in the UK. They definitely don't have a driving license. We have a procedure that we go through the first time people register for our app and before they can complete their first ride, where we actually verify their driving license using a third-party service, one of these services that's used for financial purposes and similar things like that online. So you just take a snap of your license, a quick photo, and then pretty much in real time, we can check, you can check the ID and check that it's valid, so you can get up and running on the scooter very quickly. But you have to have that driving license. If you're 90 and you have a valid driving license, we'd be very happy to welcome you to our service.
Well, look, here's an idea. I tried to do this for Santander, but it didn't, for the cycle hire scheme, but we didn't manage to progress it. It struck me a really good thing to do would be, I don't know if you can do this with GDPR, but wouldn't it be great if you could know if any famous people had ridden the scooter before you did? You know, wouldn't it just be interesting that you hired a scooter and a sort of message flashed up on your screen that Joanna Lumley had ridden that scooter only 3 months ago, or just somebody famous? I guess the problem with that is that that's not the sort of information you're allowed to share, but it occurred to me it was quite a nice marketing idea to know that you were following in the footsteps.
It's a little bit like the equivalent of if you take a black cab in London, you will often hear about the famous person the cabbie's had in the back of their cab recently. I don't know if that's GDPR compliant. I'm sure some investigation would be needed, but I like the idea.
Yeah, I think it would just be a neat idea, and you sort of come home and say, "Hey, I was on a scooter today." You'll never guess who was on it before. Yeah, it was Eamon Holmes. So I think, there's a marketing idea. How you get over the GDPR is all yours, of course, because from my position, I can just push out these ideas and leave it to people like you to find legal solutions for them. So it all sounds very exciting to me. As I said, in Stockholm, e-scooters had clearly become part of the fabric of transport and people were using them. And I don't have any information about what they did previously. It sounds to me like they might have, in some cases, been driving their cars. They might also have used taxi or private hire or bus or who knows what, but they were just enjoying the liberation of it. And presumably it's busier in the summer than in the winter, because obviously the weather's not quite so kind in the winter. But then again, I see people doing very hardy things in the driving rain and in the gales. So presumably there's enough business for you in the winter as well. It's not just a summer holiday thing, is it?
I don't think they're as seasonal as people might perhaps expect. So certainly they would be an obvious choice when the weather is beautiful and people want to enjoy the sort of the city around them and enjoy the public space. But we do also see high utilization in the winter months as well. So they're not just a summer novelty by any means.
I know. Well, look, that's been absolutely fascinating. Believe it or not, our half-hour lunch, Lucy, is over already, which is just spectacular. I wish on this audio podcast I could somehow transmit the picture I saw of the faces of my old boss, the Commissioner Mike Brown, and my old colleagues Gareth Powell and Michelle Dix and Laura Schoaf and others at the sight of me roaring up to this restaurant on an e-scooter, which is something they had never seen before. Little did they know it was something I hadn't seen before either. But it does seem to me that here is a ideal opportunity for individual personal mobility. It feels to me like reputable companies like Voi are taking every possible step to keep it safe. Make sure that people abide by the regulations, make sure that there's a maturity in the people who are riding them, and also to make sure there's protection in place to make sure they're not misused either when they're being used or when they're later parked and finished. So that's tremendous news. You can find more about them at voiscooters.com, where you'll be able to see all the news about Voi scooters and where they're operating and where you can have a go. I'm very excited. I'm very much looking forward to when they're in London, because I've reached an age where sometimes a Santander cycle is just too hard for people like me. So I'm very much looking forward to you arriving in London. And we all know there's going to be a trial in London sometime soon, we hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Lucy, thank you very much indeed for joining me for lunch, as ever. Like when we have our real lunches, it's been a great pleasure. Delighted to see you steering the ship at Voi Scooters. And this has been Lunch with Leon, which is an ITTHub.net production. Please go over to our website and take a look at not only this, but other podcasts and all the latest transport news at ITTHub.net. I'll be back again next week. As ever, my aim is to bring really interesting people from really interesting places in the world with great stories to come and have lunch with me, so that we can all share all this exciting stuff together. So Lucy, once again, thank you very much indeed for joining.
Thank you.
And I'll be back again next week.